Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com. Well, welcome back to the Azure Podcast. This is episode number 102, being recorded on the 11th of November, 2015, with special guest Eos De Bruin. My name is Sujit Mello, and on Skype with me, I have Kale Teeter and our special guest. You'll notice that Evan's not with us today. He had an emergency to take care of at the last minute, so he's taking care of some family business. And it's the three of us here today. So before I give Eos a chance to introduce himself, Kale, why don't we just run down some of the recent updates in the Azure space? There's been a few announcements since our last episode.
Yeah, there's a couple here that stand out. I know Evan had wanted to talk about was around the security aspects, and one was there's a public preview that was announced here for the Azure SQL Database Threat Detection. And essentially what this does is it detects anomalous database activities, like things that could be security threats. You can also leverage the SQL database auditing to determine, you know, more details about what happened there. So kind of parlaying on to some of the other security things that we've been implementing in Azure. You know, we had Security Center that came out there just recently, and now we have these advanced features starting to come into the different services in Azure, and SQL is one of them.
That's great. And the one that I kind of liked was this, somewhat related to our topic of discussion today, but it's this general availability of the Azure SQL Database Query Store, which is kind of like, I guess, some sort of a query analyzer and optimizer. If you have queries that are, you know, used to perform well and now performing poorly, this can create a historical, pattern of the query, and we'll analyze that and offer some suggestions on how to improve the query. So I guess that's a, you know, we used to have the query analyzer, right? Isn't that what it was called in the on-premises version of SQL Server?
Yeah, this actually looks like it's a combination of some of the things we had before. Maybe Eos could speak to it a little bit. But, you know, in the past when we had performance issues, the things we would break out would be some of that database tuning wizards and those types of things, and then as well as the profiler. Right. But some of those things we couldn't use with our past SQL offering. So I'm wondering if this is kind of filling that gap a little bit.
Yeah, basically this query store, it's net new functionality, both in Azure SQL Database as well as SQL Server. And what it does is it creates a track record of how a query is performing over time. And this is persisted within the database. So you can analyze how your query was doing yesterday, how it was doing last week, and at what point there was any kind of regression. Previously, you had to figure out, like in some other way, like your app developer or your user would tell you that the query was running slow, and you don't know what happened, what caused it. Now you can go to the query store. You can just pinpoint all the queries that are running slow. You can identify the point in time in which the change happened, and you can even say, hey, if this change was caused by a change in the query plan, then you can say, oh, actually go back to this old query plan because that one was performing better.
Oh, wow. Wow. So this applies to the on-premises version too then. That's great.
Yeah.
And it would just be an add-on to the, if somebody uses SQL Server already on-premises, it'll just be like an add-on package that they would install in it, or it'll be in a future update. Is that how they plan to deploy it?
It's for on-premises, it's just part of SQL Server 2016. So if you install it, you can just enable it in your database. And it's even integrated with SQL Server Management Studio. So you have within Management Studio, you can get like all the visualization and all the action like forcing plans that you have a nice convenient interface for that. And it is all just part of the database engine, no add-on or anything that you need to install.
That's amazing. Now, you just gave me a nice, good reason to go and try out SQL Server 2016. So that's brilliant.
There's a lot of good stuff in there.
I'm sure there is, yes. Okay, so, Kale, is there anything else that you think we should talk about, or did that cover the recent updates?
Yeah, one of the other things I just wanted to note, and maybe Evan can speak to this a bit more when he comes on next week, is he put a link in here to another podcast by a Microsoft fellow here, and basically it's about the security and the assumed breach mentality that we have around security of Azure. So getting in depth with that, I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, so he just posted that out, so it'd be good to take a look at it. It's kind of funny, it's called the Red Zone Podcast. I'm wondering if that's a play on the red versus blue scheme that we have internal there.
Okay, so this is David Cross, who's the general manager in charge of security with Microsoft Azure, so obviously a authoritative source over there.
Yep.
Great. And we'll put a link to all that stuff in the show notes, which our listeners can look at just after the episode. Well, so let's get right to our guest now. Ilse, can you please introduce yourselves for our listeners?
Absolutely. I'm a program manager in the SQL Core Engine team. The SQL Core Engine is the core query processing and storage engine that underlies both SQL Server as well as Azure SQL Database. And my main focus is on in-memory OLTP, which just went in public preview in Azure SQL DB.
Now, I got to admit, when I first saw this thing had come out, I got really excited because I've always been a big fan of in-memory databases in general. They're, you know, just by sheer performance and whatnot. And now we're doing in-memory OLTP. Is this a new functionality in as it relates to SQL itself, or is this something that was there on-premises and we're now bringing it to the cloud?
Yeah, it is the latter, really. We first shipped this feature in-memory OLTP with SQL Server 2014. And yeah, we are now bringing it to the cloud. And with bringing it to the cloud, you still have the same core functionality and the same kind of core benefits. So it is really a performance feature. So you get more performance out of your database. And with Azure SQL Database, because it is really a database as a service, there are some of the management tasks that you need to do with SQL Server you don't need to do with in-memory OLTP in the service.
Okay. And I was wondering if you could just give our listeners a quick high level on what you could do with this, like what sort of reports or transactions you could process with this in-memory OLTP system.
Yeah, so in-memory OLTP is, as the name kind of already suggests, it is a technology for OLTP workloads. So OLTP is, you have lots of transactions in the system, things like order processing, stock trading, maybe even processing data from, let's say, sensors, smart sensors in the home, smart meters for the grid. Those types of workloads are really kind of the prime candidate for in-memory OLTP. And with in-memory OLTP, you can greatly increase the performance of these workloads. So the same kind of on-premise, the same server or in Azure SQL Database, the same premium edition database can perform more transactions per second when you're using in-memory OLTP. And we have seen some really phenomenal performance improvements with customers. We have seen up to 30-fold performance improvement in terms of transactions per second that can be processed by the system.
Now, Jos, would this require any kind of like code change or anything? So if I had an on-premises workload running in SQL Database right now, and I just brought that over here, just dropping it up here or migrating it up to like Azure SQL Database, would I have to do anything to take advantage of this? Do I have to like twist any knobs? Do I have to change my code at all? Any of my queries and things?
There are a couple of things you need to kind of keep in mind. So the nice thing is, it is really what we did with in-memory OLTP is we built, in some sense, a completely new database engine, both new query processing and storage engine, but we built it right into SQL Server. So that is like kind of a big differentiator for SQL in this space, because that's not what our competitors are doing. But with that, there are some caveats that you do need to keep in mind, because we built kind of completely new data structures and new algorithms for data access. So that results in, like, potentially you will need to do some changes. Now, the good news about this being fully integrated into SQL is that when you create a table, the main thing with in-memory OLTP is your memory optimized tables, so which hold your user data. Right? So if you create a memory optimized table, it's just a create table statement. Now you do need to have some annotations there saying, hey, this is going to be a memory optimized table, but for the most part, it is going to look the same as your traditional table. So you replace your traditional tables with these memory optimized tables. And we do have some kind of limitations in the features that you can use. For example, at this point, you cannot use spatial data types or computed columns. And we have a couple of other limitations. And these come from the fact that this was all kind of architected from the ground up. So there are a couple of things that we need to consider there, but we are closing the gap. Like in SQL 2014, we have a lot more gaps, like there were no check constraints, no foreign key constraints. We are adding these features now so that it becomes easier and easier to use. In terms of your queries, no, you don't need to worry about what the queries look like. They just look the same. The one thing is we also now have this concept of natively compiled stored procedures to optimize your performance even further. So if you want to use those, then you will need to do a bit more tweaks, let's say, to the app. But in order to just get started, just use these memory optimized tables. And we have something called Memory Optimization Advisor built into SQL Server Management Studio that you can use to just convert your traditional disk based tables to memory optimized.
Oh, that's cool.
So that's from a kind of programmability aspect. It's very easy to use. Now, the one thing you do need to keep in mind is that data in memory optimized tables does need to fit in memory when you think about like on-premise SQL Server. And when you think about Azure SQL Database, it needs to fit in your in-memory OLTP storage cap. So every premium service tier has an XDP storage cap associated with it. Like P1 is right now 1 gigabyte, P2 is 2 gigabytes, P11 is 10 gigabytes. So, and we do intend to see if we can increase those over time, those gaps. But your data that is in your memory optimized tables needs to fit within that gap. That's not to say that your database needs to fit in that. No, it's just some of your hot data needs to fit in there.
Yeah, and along with that, and you mentioned there kind of as you were talking there, so do we have to do anything special in Azure, or do we just have to be on like kind of the premium SKUs to take advantage of this?
Yeah, with Azure right now in the public preview, you need to create a new database. So you cannot use it in pre-existing databases. You need to create a new premium database. There's a limitation in preview that will go away when we go GA eventually. For now, you need to create this new database. But once you have this database created, you can just get started. You can start creating your tables, inserting your data, running your queries, and running your workloads.
And will this like I assume this would like fit into at some point, or maybe it does right now, the same model we have up there for Azure SQL databases where we can have the polling so we could pull our databases. Does it work with that too, or is there any restrictions there?
Sorry, the polling databases?
Yeah, where we can build a pool of databases up there.
A pool. Yeah. Sorry. Yes, an elastic pool you're talking about. It is right now, this is also a limitation that we have in public preview. I don't have a timeline for you just yet, but we are looking at like how this feature is going to work in the Elastic pools as well.
Yeah. Now, you know, one of the things when customers talk to me or I talk to them about doing anything in memory, they're always concerned that, oh, if it's in memory, then there's a potential of some sort of a disaster, right? If the power goes or whatever, we lose everything. How do we address those kind of concerns, especially now that we're, you know, going up to the cloud as well? Like, what's the risk with doing something in memory?
Yeah, so the way we built the system is we want to have all the usual asset guarantees, including durability, right? So when you commit a transaction and a commit is successful, then you want to have the guarantee that if the server falls over, that still this data is retained, right? The data that you inserted with this transaction.
Right.
And we honor that guarantee. So when you run the commit statement, then we write a log record that includes the rows inserted into memory optimized tables. So all the operations on the memory optimized tables are fully logged.
I see. That's good to know.
Well, that is the default behavior. That's what we call also schema and data durability, because both the schema and the data are durable. So that's the default option. Now, we also do have the option for scenarios where you actually have more transient data. So, for example, you do ETL operations, or you are maintaining like the user session state for a website, things like that, where it is not a big deal if you lose the data, because you can reproduce it from another source, just use it for intermediate processing, right? So for that scenario, we actually have the schema-only tables, which are not logged. So then you are fully in memory. And you don't ever need to go to disk, so then you can get even higher performance, but of course at the cost of the lack of durability.
Got
that
it.
Is why, of course, the fully durable tables are the default. So by default, we log every operation in the transaction log, and every transaction is fully durable.
Okay. Now, you know, one of the things when I first saw about this real-time analytics, we have a lot of things in Azure today that help us do analytics, right? I think we have Event Hubs, I think, is another mechanism that we could use, and HD Insights with the Storm. It's Apache Storm. That's called Storm, I think, right? So what's the sweet spot where someone should consider using, you know, doing OLTP and real-time analytics in Azure SQL Database versus some of these other products?
So we haven't really touched on real-time analytics just yet. So let me tell you what kind of the story looks like in Azure SQL for real-time analytics. So the idea of real-time analytics is the ability to get real-time business insight based on your operational data. So you have, let's say, order processing app or CRM app, and you want to get insight about, like, how am I doing, which regions are selling well, which customers are very satisfied, all these things. That is real-time analytics, or the ability to do that real-time with up to the second data from your operational system. That's called real-time analytics. And you do these operations, you do those in a database, a relational database. That's really the only place where applications do that kind of work. So then, if you want to run analytics in real time, you need to actually go to the place where this data is being generated, which is the relational database.
Right.
So you run your queries in your relational database to get the real-time insights. And I mean, people have been doing that for a long time, but there are like a couple of challenges with this model, with traditional database technology. In particular, analytics queries, other than typical operations, analytics queries need to look at a large amount of data, right? You want to look, for example, at all your sales across all your regions and do some aggregation mm-hmm. there. So you need to scan all your data, and that is like a very CPU and disk intensive operation. And this can potentially affect your online workload, your online transaction processing workloads, which you really don't want to do because you want your sales to always go through, right? You don't want the database to stall your sales.
Right.
So we are addressing that with our, we call this non-clustered column store technology. So column store technology allows you to, compression, advanced compression techniques, column-based compression to compress the data to much smaller chunks, and it used advanced query processing techniques, which we call batch processing, to be able to run these big analytics queries that scan so much of your data, to be able to run these queries much more efficiently. So when you use those column store indexes in your workload, in your database, then you can run these real-time analytics queries without having a big impact on your online operational workload.
Oh, so it's analyzing a small portion at a time. Is that the way to look at it?
No, you analyze everything, right? You analyze all your data, but when using our column store indexes, these have significant compression. That means that because this is so compressed and because we have advanced query processing techniques, which we call batch mode, we require a lot less resources to actually do these scans, these big scans.
I see.
Right? Because we scan a compressed format, which takes much less time than scanning a full expanded table, and the batch mode processes like batches of rows at a time, which is much more efficient than a traditional processing of one row at a time.
Got it. Does not impact the OLTP side of the wall, so to speak.
It has minimal impact there. I mean, you're still using some resources, but this is much less impact. So you can run these queries much more efficiently, much faster, and they're much less impact on the online workload. And this technology is actually already generally available when you use traditional tables. And it is in public preview right now when you use the new memory optimized tables.
Okay.
Yeah, so I remember years and years ago when we used to do analytics workloads, we had to, this exact case, right? Because we always had to pull some sort of reporting database or some sort of data mart or something. We would pull this data out into another database, and then we could do kind of our stuff on top of that, our analytics or reporting or those kind of things, so we don't affect transactions. So this is kind of giving you the best of both worlds. You can just run that right inside of your transactional database.
Yeah, I hear you. I mean, pulling this data out of the database, transforming it, putting it into another database, that's a major headache.
Yep.
This is like a process that you typically need to run daily or more often, as you have so many components, so many things that can go wrong. It's just a pain. So our model going forward is you just run your analytics queries in your main operational database.
Right, and that's the only way you can call it real time, right? You have to run it on the main database.
Exactly. Otherwise, you have a day-old data. It's all stale. You don't get your real insights.
Okay.
Interesting.
That's very, very insightful. Thank you.
Yeah.
That's great. So what's the sweet spot for selecting this particular option, though, right? The in-memory OLTP with the real-time analytics as an add-on, but when would you consider doing it in memory? Obviously there's a cost to it, right? You can't just say I want to. Not everybody. It's not good for everybody. I would say.
Well, we would like it to be to work well for everybody. I mean, it is pretty general purpose. So in many transaction processing workloads, you can use it. The main thing you need to worry about is that your data in these tables does fit in memory, so that is some kind of thing you need to keep in mind.
Right.
And you can monitor the memory size through the Azure portal, and you can set up alerting. Right? If you're getting close to the boundary, you get an alert, and you can do things. You can, for example, increase your service tier to get more in-memory storage space, or you can move some data back to disk. And actually, that is actually what many of our customers do. They use a memory optimized table as a kind of shock absorber to allow a high volume of data ingestion, data coming in from a lot of different sources into the database, and batch offloading this to a traditional disk-based table, because a batch offload is usually more efficient, and disk-based tables can handle those a little bit better. So if you're talking about sweet spots, I think I would say two sweet spots. One is the kind of scenario I just mentioned, where you have a lot of data coming into your database from various sources, and your database is having kind of trouble keeping up. Use memory optimized table as a shock absorber. Another scenario is another kind of key scenario that I want to mention is a session state scenario, where you maintain the states of sessions of your applications, of the users accessing your application. You may want to maintain them in a database, and you can have them even in a non-durable table. And there, those you can access them very efficiently. And this is the scenario where we have seen up to 30-fold improvement.
That is great. That's very good, actually. Thank you. Right, Cale, so do we have any more questions for yours?
No, I think this has been great. It's good to get insight into some of these things, because stuff's moving so fast, and there's always optimizations coming here. We mentioned the security stuff early, and now these performance optimizations and these kind of things that enable these real-time workloads. I think it's awesome. These are just making the platform even more attractive.
Great, and this is in this is in preview now. Is that right?
That's correct. It's currently in public preview.
Excellent. Well, Jos, I really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show and talk to our listeners. We'll certainly take a look at this now, and hopefully our listeners will too. And hopefully we'll generate some questions, some more usage for you guys, and you can get some feedback from our listeners.
Yeah, great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Yep, thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.